production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
The zoo, the greensward, and what's next tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined tonight by Jim Dean, President and CEO of the Memphis Zoo. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Along with Bill Dries, reporter with the Daily Memphian. And let me say at the top, as you know, Tina Sullivan was going to be here, the executive director of Overton Park Conservancy, and got sick and could not. But we decided to go and have you on because you're busy and we could talk through some things. And let me also disclose that I'm on the board of the Overton Park Conservancy and have been for 6 years, was former president and vice president. So I'll try to disclose that through the show for people who come in, and I'll try to be as unbiased as possible. And you, we have met a number of times, but if I get off track, you are free to call me out on that.
And I will do that.
You are 6 months in at the zoo?
Yeah, a little bit more than that, yeah.
We'll talk a lot about the greensward and the parking and the kind of news of that. We'll talk also about the zoo and the park as a whole and other things. But as we were talking before the show, I mean, there's so much emotion and frustration on all sides, and there were many sides, there weren't two sides, of this whole greensward issue. One question is, why in the world would you want to come back to Memphis and take this job and step into that fray?
Yeah, Eric, that's a great question. A lot of people have asked me that, and this is my hometown. As you know, I grew up in Memphis and left to build my career, and was excited about coming back. I'm not really burdened by what happened in the past. I've obviously done my homework and did a lot of research about, you know, what happened with the greensward and parking and the zoo. And in my career, I've had lots of parking challenges in the theme parks that I've worked in. And so I'm not a stranger to parking challenges. And I realize, and I've met a lot of people in Midtown, and obviously I've talked to a lot of people as close to the zoo and to Overton Park about the issues. And I think we're at a really good spot now where we have a solution. And I think most people are very happy about that, and I'm kind of in the right place at the right time.
So let's talk a little bit about that, the solution that came forward somewhat suddenly, I don't know, in the last couple months, and just as construction was going to begin on the Prentice Place lot, which is the lot over by McLean,
yep,
that has been a surface lot. The buses used to be parked there, people may remember, just to orient people. And suddenly that was going to be reconfigured, and then the main lot was going to be reconfigured, and about 2.5 acres of kind of
the greensward,
not the part that could really be seen, but that was going to be taken for a reconfigured parking lot, and about 200 trees were going to come down.
Yeah.
Suddenly it came out that, well, wait, let's hold off, and maybe we'll do a parking deck, parking structure, parking, it's not quite a garage,
right,
but over on the Prentice Place lot.
Yeah.
That would take care of many of the spaces that the zoo needs and that the ordinance the city past calls for. That's the solution, you think, is
right,
this parking deck that would then, you don't have to go into the greensward, you don't have to remove as many trees. That's the solution, you think?
Yes, I think it's a great solution too, and one that I know has been discussed in the past, and I'm so happy I've talked to the mayor about it and his team about the solution, and it's a great place that we've ended up, and certainly it preserves Overton Park and the greensward. And I've said before, if we want to be one of the best zoos in the world, you know, what better way to approach this than have Overton Park as our front door and preserving the greensward and the trees, and because that's really the entrance to our zoo. And I couldn't be happier to be looking at a solution on the Prentice lot. Prentice lot's almost finished now. They've been working on it for a few months, and they're literally cleaning up as we speak.
And that's the reconfiguration, not the structure.
That's right. The original plan was the reconfiguration of the Prentice lot. And now we're talking about how do we construct a one-level parking structure on top of that existing lot that will give us the parking spaces we need. We need about 1,400 spaces in total. And I've said from the beginning that we need to be a better zoo, not a bigger zoo. And we've been working on making the zoo better. And parking is part of that constraint that we have. But we also occupy a little less than 80 acres. So we're never going to be a 2 or 3 million attendance zoo. So let's make it the best zoo in the world, not the biggest zoo.
All right, we'll come back to a bunch of the themes, but I want to get Bill involved right now.
Jim, I think the last time we talked about this was like the day after you had talked to the neighbors, the homeowners around the Prentice Place site for this. Fill me in on what's happened since then.
Well, when I arrived here, Bill, I realized that we had a black eye from the past over parking, and particularly the Greens Ward, and so I've tried to embark on an effort to meet as many people in Midtown as I could. Certainly, the OPA and the OPC, and the OPC's allowed me to serve on the board there. So we're a partner in this, and I wanted to get everybody's opinion and how do we move forward. And certainly, the neighbors right there next to Prentice Place and on Autumn are most affected by it. And we've had some conversations with them. We've had a meeting with them specifically. We don't have a lot of details yet about what the parking structure is going to look like specifically, but we've made a commitment to try to use landscaping to screen that, and we can make it as attractive as possible and hopefully mitigate, you know, any negative impression that the neighbors might have about it.
What prompted the move to say, okay, the lot is almost ready, let's see if we can make a garage work on it?
I think it's smart people get involved and have good discussions about solutions. And I don't know how the discussions were in the past, but we were looking for alternatives and opportunities. And reconfiguring our front lot is we need to do. If you've been to the zoo lately, it needs to be addressed, just our front lot. So we're going to find a few more spots in our front lot, reconfigure it. The Prentice Place lot right now, as it is reconfigured, looks fantastic. I couldn't be happier with the work that Montgomery Martin has done to reconfigure that lot. It looks great, and I can't wait to open it. If we can do that kind of work on our front lot and again build that berm between our existing parking lot and the Greens Ward, it's a great solution for everyone involved. And it's going to make the park better, it's going to make the zoo better, and it's going to make Midtown better.
And the Greens Ward controversy really bubbled to the surface 6 years ago. And in that 6 years, there have been some changes in these kind of parking structures. I mean, but because this has to ultimately come in at the $3 million that the Overton Park Conservancy and the zoo have raised in private funds. So in the last 6 years, these garages have become a little less expensive and probably more within that $3 million figure.
And that's why I think we came back to the table and had a discussion about it, because I think technology's changed and there's this modular solution that's available now that's affordable and I think will work for us. And frankly, it gives us even some covered parking, which is awfully nice too. So I'm excited about it.
And I should say, I guess in my awkward position here as both questioner and as a member of the Overton Park Conservancy, the Conservancy Board has been supportive of this plan and has, you know, likes the idea, because obviously it doesn't cut into the Greens Ward at all, and as long as it can stay within the price that's been put out there. And I think everyone feels good that it can be done that way. The city, I think, has said, Kyle Vesey, when the story came out, who's deputy operating officer. I still remember as a reporter, that, you know, this is still not done, but it's promising enough that we should not move forward with any more construction, that we should, it may delay things, it may mean that parking on the Greensward continues a little bit longer, but that was the city's position, and the OPC was very supportive. Well, I think the one thing that's interesting, you know, and you can't answer this because you're new, I think if anything, some OPC people and some other people who support the park thought, well, why didn't this happen sooner? You know, this was talked about 6 years ago when this came up. And have you heard that? I mean,
yeah,
people said, why didn't this happen?
Yeah, I've heard
that. It was always possible to do a garage or do a parking structure.
I think to Bill's point, I think it's become more affordable. And it probably wasn't a solution 6 or 7 years ago, because I've looked at parking structures in my past, and they've been as expensive as $20,000 or $30,000 a parking space to build a concrete structure. So you'd be talking about multiples of what the cost of this project is.
I do remember actually a proposal that was a parking garage structure within the main lot that was some $3-5 million.
That's right.
So I mean, and that was, no one, zoo or OPC or anyone, was really eager to spend that much money on it.
And having a parking structure on the Prentice lot is really even a better solution, because it's really more out of sight from the front of the zoo and from from the park. So as you're looking at the, you're in the park looking back toward the zoo, you're not going to see a parking structure, and you'll see a berm, and hopefully you won't even see our parking lot, which will really be nice.
And then the a couple of things about just the parking logistics, and move kind of some other issues, but the parking logistics, will other entities, the Shell, other people be able to use that structure for events when the zoo is closed? I mean, will there be sharing of the lot and the parking structure?
Absolutely. Our business is very seasonal, and when the parking structure and our lots are available, I don't see a reason why we couldn't allow the Shell or anyone else to use the parking spaces. I'd love to partner more with the Shell. I wish the Shell was a little bit closer to the zoo, actually, because I'd love to use that facility. It's beautiful, and you know, if anybody can use the lot, they could.
The other changes in parking, will there be more automation, more, you know, sort of electronic? I think it may have already changed since you got there, but it used to be you kind of had to go up to the turnstile, pay your money, have your card run.
Yeah.
There were two lots. And this gets into traffic management in the high season, you know, that there's, I mean, the zoo is, and the park as a whole is a victim of its popularity.
That's right.
Will there be streamlining of traffic as part of this new configuration and the new garage?
It will. There will be, Eric. We're aware that a visit to the zoo, the experience starts before you get to the zoo. It's in traffic, and so to streamline that process is paramount to benefit, you know, the zoo and the park. So we have a toll booth right now that you stop and pay a parking fee if you're not a member. And we've looked at automated solutions from companies that do things on your mobile phone, where you can pay for your parking in advance and eliminate our toll booth and streamline the flow into the zoo. And we're evaluating those opportunities, because I think it would be beneficial to people as they visit the zoo coming in.
Bill.
We've talked a lot about the parking lot. Let's talk about what actually happens within the zoo. Zoos for quite some time now have been more about just displaying various animals, exotic animals, things like that. Talk a little bit about the conservation programs and that go on that people may not see during an average visit to the zoo.
I appreciate you asking that, Bill. It's the reason we exist, is conservation and education. We entertain hundreds of thousands of school kids a year that come to the zoo on field trips, and so education's a big component of what we do every day. But conservation and research, we have a world-class team there that's doing incredible work. And one of the things that we need to do a better job of is kind of turning what we've been saying, turning the zoo inside out, and giving our visitors better exposure to what we do with conservation and education. And you might know that we've just recently taken our food operation in-house, and so we've hired a director and an executive chef, and so we've taken control of our own food operations. And one of the very first things we've said is we formed a green team, if you will, to be more conservation-minded, and we're getting rid of all of our styrofoam, all of our plastics, and we're starting in our culinary operations and our merchandise operations to do that. So there's a lot of layers to the zoo that is not just about displaying animals that are in world-class facilities. It's about the conservation education that we're doing as well.
Do those conservation programs become more important as we start to see various species threatened by climate change?
Absolutely. In fact, our research team is saving species from extinction right now, and the Louisiana pine snake is a good example of that. They were down to dangerously low populations in the wild, and our team is actually hatching and releasing Louisiana pine snakes, and we're saving a species from extinction. But we're also working with the Overland Park Conservancy, and Eric probably knows this, but our research team is working with the OPC on what is one of the most fertile areas of our city in Overland Park, and there's a vibrant population of wildlife in the park. And we're studying that wildlife to learn more about that as well. And there's a healthy population of snakes and mammals in the park that we're helping to study.
And in the old forest.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah.
Just for certain viewers, I'm sure would like to know where those snakes are being released.
The snakes are not being released in Overland Park or in Memphis. Back in their native habitat.
Do you plans for other exhibits?
Yes.
You know, what's the last big one? The Hippo exhibit.
Zambezi, yeah.
Zambezi opened and
that was the last of our original, the master plan that really modernized the zoo as we know it today was developed in 1986. And we completed that master plan with the construction and opening of Zambezi and our hippo habitat. And so now we're undertaking the completion of that master plan as we're working with architects to develop really the future of the Memphis Zoo. And that's, you know, we're doing a lot of things right now to make the zoo more fun. And certainly we'd like to drive attendance and revenue. We're a not-for-profit, so every dollar that we make is a dollar that we get to spend on conservation and education and bringing more fun to the zoo and reasons for people to visit. But we also need to complete our master plan and finish what is Africa, our elephant habitat with giraffes and rhinos and hoofstock, and then the west end of the zoo where the old aquarium is. And I remember that aquarium when I was a kid growing up here and going to it. It hasn't changed much since those days. So we're undertaking an endeavor to redevelop the west end of the zoo.
Is that also where I remember going over there when my kids were little, where the rides are?
That's
and
right.
That whole area.
The farm and the rides and the aquarium and the penguins. And so we're developing a world-class habitat in that end of the zoo that we're still working on the design aspects of it now.
I remember some people, some criticism, some just debate about the notion of, you know, can the zoo constantly do $15 and $30 million new exhibits, you know, big high dollar exhibits that, I mean, is that the future of zoos, to constantly spark attendance, that you have to do something that's that big, that expensive, and that attention getting? Or there's also the debate of, and I've talked to board members of yours, people we you know, obviously both know, who've said, well, but let's actually spend a little more time on the existing and just improving some of the existing exhibits we have, not the big, huge, you know, the big starstruck $20-30 million.
I think that's a great question, Eric. We're focused on finishing an area of the zoo that really is old and needs to be you know, redesigned and reimagined and have world-class habitats. But once we finish with, and then we'll maintain the existing habitats that we have and always improve as we can as things change. But it is about improving the quality of the experience of the visit, delivering great educational experience as well. And we're now working on what we call an animal ambassador program, where we're going to bring tactile experiences to the sidewalk with our education team and let school-age kids learn more about animals really up close and touch and feel and see animals and learn from our education team. I think there's great value in that.
9 minutes left, Bill.
All right. So when we think of aquariums these days, that aquarium building is not what comes to mind. It's actually kind of a timepiece when you look at it. But on the other hand, you have a lot of gallons of water in various places in the zoo, for instance, the hippo exhibit, the Zambezi River Camp exhibit, includes a lot of water elements in it. Do you feel the need to have an aquarium that is something along those lines in terms of gallons that you bring in, gallons of water that you bring in for it?
I'm a little bit nostalgic about our zoo. It started in 1906, so we've got an incredible history. And like what was done with Cat Country, remember the cat house that's now our restaurant, our main restaurant, used to be the cat habitat, if you will, and you'd
concrete.
Walk through the middle of it and look at big cats in cages on the sides. And we now have an open air, very modern habitat for our big cats. And so we have a nod to history by keeping the old cat house and converting it into a restaurant. And I see the old aquarium in a similar way. I'd love to keep that facility, that building, as a nod to history, and it might be a portal into something new one day. But I think we do need an aquarium facility of some kind, you know, just to be a world-class zoo. I think we need to exhibit aquarium facilities, and we'll have that in the new area.
On the border with the old forest, there is some land that was envisioned as a Chickasaw Bluffs type exhibit.
Yes.
And nothing really has happened about that. It actually kind of folded into the Greensward controversy at one point. What are the plans for that?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me that. That was apparently a very sensitive matter. And when I arrived, I ask a lot of questions about that. We had a big sign in the zoo about Chickasaw Bluffs and what was going to happen there. And we've since decided to hit pause on that. And that's a, you know, the old forest is valuable, a valuable asset to the park and to the zoo. And so we've got plenty of real estate within the existing zoo, like the West End that I was just referring to, that needs to be redeveloped. And there's, you know, there's not a use and there's not a plan for the old forest at this point. We're gonna leave it as is. It's adjacent to Teton, and it's beautiful and part of the, you know, part of what the appeal is of Overton Park and the zoo. So we are not moving forward with that at this point.
And I can say the official line from the Overton Park Conservancy is thank you. I mean, truly, that was a big point that we heard from our members and all the various Overton Park groups advocated for, is that 17 acres not get touched. And I should say for people joining late, obviously I'm on the board of the Overton Park Conservancy. Tina Sullivan, executive director, was going to be here today. You've actually, you know, talked to her and worked with her a whole lot in the 6 months. She got sick and so was not able to be here today. One thing about the visitor experience that I think happened or is going to happen is you're serving beer. Is that right? We should have led. This is probably the biggest part of the zoo.
You know, we've undertaken an opportunity. You know, I said we want to make the zoo a better place and more fun. Obviously been a little sensitive. There are some people that believe we shouldn't serve beer. And what they, I guess, don't realize is we already serve beer. We have a license. We have an alcohol license that allows us to sell and serve alcoholic beverages after our normal operating hours. So if you come to any of our events, including our member events, you can enjoy an adult beverage at our zoo. We've applied for a license like other zoos in the state and throughout the country. In fact, every theme park in the country, just about, including the Magic Kingdom in Orlando, serves alcoholic beverages. So we've applied for a license to do so during our normal operating hours, and we'll have beer, wine, and spirits available at some point. I think our license will be effective summer.
And you come from, you were most recently in Florida at SeaWorld?
Yeah.
SeaWorld. Other places, your background?
Busch Gardens. I was the president of Busch Gardens in Tampa, Florida, and president of SeaWorld in Orlando. So worked with Anheuser-Busch for over 30 years in their theme park division. So grew up in Memphis and happy to be back in Memphis.
Yeah, but a couple minutes left, Bill.
Let's talk about North Parkway. One of the first moves that was made by the Strickland administration was on-street parking on North Parkway, on the side of North Parkway where the zoo is. Some talk about that becoming another entrance to the zoo. Not a whole lot of movement on it. You're open to the idea.
I am open to it. We have about 100 parking spaces on North Parkway. And we do have a second gate there that's a little bit of an overflow gate. It's not our best, we're not putting our best foot forward there. And if we could accommodate everyone through the front gate, I would prefer that. But if overflow parking, there's 100 spaces. And at peak times, we need those 100 spaces. And it's a long walk to the front gate from back there. So we're going to improve that gate on the back side of the zoo and use that when needed. But 1,400 spaces in total, 100 back on the North Parkway side, we'll use that when necessary. Mm-hmm. But we have the parking with this new plan that we need going forward, and we're happy about that. And we're also working on our perimeter. Our perimeter needs some beautification, and I've talked to the neighborhood about that.
Yeah, the outward, that's what I was going to say. You mean the outward facing, fencing, and kind of where, you know.
So the team at the zoo is working hard on that, and we have a plan in place, and you'll probably see some changes to the outside of the zoo that I think everyone will be pleased with.
The MCA, Memphis College of Art, and Brooks, I mean, you've come in, not that that's your responsibility or your fault or the zoo's fault, but there's a lot of change and some uncertainty about what's happening with those entities, MCA particularly. Are you part of that conversation, or are you kind of a bystander?
Where do you and the zoo stand? Unfortunately, we're a little bit of a bystander right now. I'd like to be part more engaged in that conversation, but I think it's a great opportunity for us. It might, depending on what goes in either one of those two facilities, generate some more traffic, and that causes some challenges. But I think it's a great opportunity to bring more people into Overton Park, I'm excited about it.
An opportunity, has the zoo looked at or assessed either building to move in, or have you put forward a plan to occupy?
No, we have not put forward any plan on either one of those facilities, but we'll certainly partner with those whoever ends up occupying those facilities.
As we close, come back to the greensward and the fight, and I think as people hear you, and I've heard this from everyone you've interacted with, you know, OPA and other people, that wow, there's a whole different kind of approach from the zoo, and you get a tremendous amount of credit for that. How much, as you come in with this kind of objective look, this sort of fresh look, how much damage financially did that whole fight do in terms of, you know, people talked about, I've torn up my membership card. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that was 10 people or that was thousands of people, but how much damage, I mean, really economic damage did it do to the zoo?
We haven't measured that. It's a good question. No question there's been damage to our reputation and to our relationships in Memphis. And I came here because I was excited about the opportunity to make the zoo better. And I think, having one of the best zoos in the world is going to make Memphis better. And that's what really excites me. And we have a relatively new team at the zoo now, and we're open-minded about that. And we want to give people a reason and an opportunity to come back and love the zoo that they used to love. So I think that's, I don't know what the damage has been, but we're not focused on that. We're focused on how we can be the best neighbor we can be going forward.
All right. Well, thank you for being here. That's all the time we have. Thank you, Bill. And thank you for joining us. Join us again next week.